I am just the worst because of this.
So at that point, I was rock bottom.
It's impossible. There's no way.
Because for a long time, I was always blaming myself. Like, this is all my fault. I started this.
And just had
this.
The mindset of, like, I'm never going to overcome this, you know? Like, I was giving in and letting Satan beat me into the ground.
The terrible kid who has to go to porn. Like, I failed. Like, I got to the point.
I ended up losing a really horrible battle.
It's really in that moment that you're at that rock bottom stage that you have a fork in the road and you are forced to choose.
And I chose to fight, and I choose to fight today, and I'll choose to fight tomorrow because winning is worth it.
I just feel like the man right now.
I'm fighting for my life, man, and now I fight to live. I don't just fight to live, dude, I fight to live the best life I can.
You're going to recover from this.
And if I can do this, you can do it.
It's like the start of a race, and that adrenaline's pumping, and you're like, let's go. Let's get going, because today, I change. And nothing, not even the armies of hell themselves, will stop me.
I am a warrior.
I'm a provider, presider, protector.
Satan is our enemy.
You're not alone?
Whatever
it
takes.
I fight with fury.
Let's go.
We will win this war. Don't mess with us.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
Hi.
Welcome to the Eternal Freaking Warrior Podcast.
We've added an F in there.
Call. Welcome to the Eternal Warrior Podcast, helping young people in their quest for self-mastery, sharing stories from the battlefront in the war against Satan and pornography.
Amen. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.
I was just thinking of how Maurice ends our intro for this season. I just chills every time.
Chills. We will win this. In his voice, it sounds a little bit like Liam Neeson.
Yeah. But also just the conviction. And it's almost, I don't want to say flippant, but it's just so sure. We will win this war. The scoreboard is set.
Don't mess with us.
Don't mess with us.
Oh, dude.
I love Maurice.
So cool.
And we love you guys. We've heard from a lot of you this week, some incredible warriors reaching out to us and sharing your stories, your victories, your triumphs, some of your shortcomings and lost battles. We want to hear it all. We want to hear it all, and we want you to be successful.
Your questions. So cool.
Oh, man.
Just had a couple of peeps reach out about accountability partners. Oh, man. So many cool things. Please, anything you have, reach out. podcast@lifechangingservices.org. We have today an individual who did such an and thing.
He did do and such thing.
He did. He heard and podcast and then hence wrote into that email and now
shared with
behold,
us an incredible story that we couldn't keep to ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're humbled to have Tyler here with us. We're going to introduce him in just a moment. First off, thoughts from last week with Josh on the show. Just, man, to see so much like fury against Satan and fire in his conviction for what he wants to accomplish in life and in his mission at the humble age of how old is he? 18, 19?
I think he's 19 now. Yeah.
Just a pup, man. And the kid is an absolute warrior.
Warrior. No, he might still be 18. Gosh, young sap.
Ugh, bless him.
But man, I totally agree. His reasons for fighting were so cool because it had very special people connected to it, but it also was for him. I mean, he went through his reasons for fighting, you know, fighting for
his mission.
The mission.
Yeah.
Right. The female in my life.
The female. He's got one of them.
But the fact that I fight for myself, I fight because, you know, oh man, so cool.
And also he talked about how he fights and some feedback we've been getting is that you guys need some more actionable things to go on. It's great to hear the stories of fellow warriors, but you're really looking for some principles that you can put into practice throughout the week. Josh does a really good job of that, talking about drills and how flagpoles and manpower and just going through those things again and again and again to simulate a battle, to prepare for them is just invaluable.
You know what's interesting? Because I was thinking about his episode today and today that we are recording, and I thought about, I was in my work building And I was like, I need to get from right where I am up to this point in the building. What's the fastest way there possible?
Oh.
Right? Like, immediately, we always are looking for the easiest, quickest way, quickest path to get to point from point A to point Z. Are our brains any different? Like, our brains are literally how we behave is what's happening in our brains.
You bring up something so funny, and this is so true, but it's kind of embarrassing.
Okay.
But this is a safe space, right? So where we're recording right now, we're actually recording in Lane Hilton's office in downtown Salt Lake. And I parked at the Dunkin' Donuts next door.
And shout out to our sponsor.
Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin', if you'd like to give us money, we'll take it. But
and your donuts.
So I parked there, and I look at my Fitbit, and I'm at like 9,100 steps for the day.
Ooh, dog. And
I know, killing well it, done. Right? So my goal for the day is 10K. And so I'm thinking, you know what? The fastest way to the office would not yield the requisite amount of steps that I want to get to 10,000. So I purposefully like did a lap around the block, like counterclockwise all the way away, so that then I got the little wrist buzz and got a hit of dopamine because I'm fit as a fiddle. And but to what you're saying, Spence, it's not dissimilar to what we have to do to create new neural pathways in our brains.
And that's exactly what Josh talked about the entire episode.
Yep.
How to create new pathways in your brain. Dude, so powerful. And your analogy, that actually is brilliant because we talked about this briefly. This is a longer intro than I expected, but this is just good shiz.
It's great. It's great shiz.
So the analogy you just bring up of you walking to get to the same destination, which in our midbrain are that... It still needs to be satisfied.
Yeah.
But it can't be in the same way that it wants to, right? So when we talked about efficiency mechanisms, yeah, it wants to go from point A to point Z in the easiest, quickest way, like you did here, mm-hmm. like you wanted to get. But the long way around is actually the right way. It's the one that you feel proud about. You get in the right amount of steps, and from an analogy, right, is you're putting in the work. I have to say that. Did I have to say that?
No,
but you like put in the right steps to get to where you actually want to go, and it satisfies. When you said, "I felt like a bad mamma jamma," I felt like a fit fiddle. I think were your exact words.
They were.
Which I don't. A fit fiddle. I'm still trying to figure.
You ever seen a fiddle with its shirt off?
Can't
tell you. Okay. Anyways. Here's a message from Cody Haas.
So happy you're listening to the Eternal Warrior Podcast. There's not a week that goes by where a warrior hasn't shared how the Eternal Warrior Podcast has helped them win a battle. My name is Cody Haas, and I'm a licensed therapist who helps those dealing with sexual addiction, betrayal trauma, trauma in general, marital recovery, and mental illness. Over the years, I've gathered resources to help those who desperately want to get to a better place. If you feel you're in need, please reach out to me by calling 385-519-6089 to set up an initial assessment. Once again, 385-519-6089. God bless you on your journey, my friend, and keep listening to Wes and Spenny. And remember, if you're doing things like listening to the Eternal Warrior Podcast, you're increasing your power and resilience. Remember the power you feel while you listen to Wes and Spenny, and replicate it daily by going and doing the things they share. You got this.
Thank you, Cody, and I'm sorry for the unceremonious segue.
But we
appreciate your sponsorship, and we love having you on and learning from you. Speaking of having people on, our dear friend Tyler is joining us today.
Dude.
He's an absolute champ. Tyler wrote in to us, told us a little bit about his story, and we couldn't keep him secret. We wanted to share him with you guys.
As way of introduction, Tyler, could you tell us really quick how you came to this point in today, sitting in Lane Hilton's office talking on a podcast?
Yeah, guys, I just want to say thank you, and I really appreciate you. The podcast has made a big difference in my life, and I listen to it a lot. Especially, I've gone through all the episodes now, and I've at the point where I've had to go find other content to listen to as I go back and forth to work. But early on, especially, it made a big difference in my life, and I wrote out to Wes and Spenny and just thanked them for how awesome this has been for me, and told them why I fought, and hopefully it was trying to, you know, give you guys some love back because you've given me so much love. And
you gave us some juice, man.
Dude, you know,
a heck of an email.
I got an email back asking if I would be willing to come on the show. And anything I can do right now to help others is really, that's why I'm here and I'm happy to be here and part of this.
The reason why I wanted you to say that to start this conversation is because I really genuinely want people to know that this season is an open book right now. Well, is that the right? It's an unwritten book. It is not as what? What I mean by that is if you feel as you're listening to this, if you feel.
So here's the deal is we have certain topics that we want to cover, but we don't have certain people filled to discuss those things.
Correct.
And so if you write in and are passionate about a certain principle of the program and
recovery,
it kind of fits with what we're trying to curate, we'd love to have you on the show.
100%.
Share your story and experience. So
yeah, please.
Be like Tyler.
Be like Tyler, dude.
Podcast at lifechangingservices.org.
Yeah. Okay, so Tyler, we did get to debrief a little bit on Tyler and his life before the recording, but just give the background on the family really quick, because that was, it hit like right into my soul.
You know, I've got an awesome family. I'm married and I've got three kids. Awesome family. I mean, I couldn't ask for more, honestly. They've been
I wish all the listeners could see that picture that you just showed us.
He shared his picture of his cute family. They're darling, darling family.
Darling. Oh my gosh. Anyways, I wanted you to talk about that because
I love them to death and they're a huge reason why I'm here and because I want to keep them, right? I want my family forever.
And how old are you, Tyler?
I'm 31.
31, all right. Yeah. Good man.
He's a Utah State Aggie.
Oh. Yeah. I knew it. I knew it the moment he walked in the door. I'm like,
yeah, go Aggs, right?
There's something about this guy.
That guy loves the spot where the sagebrush grows. That's for certain.
He's got some swag. Hence, he's a swaggy? Is that
sure? I saw where you were going.
Did you like it or is it forced?
I'm for it. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I seem like I don't, but I do. Okay.
Go Aggies, dude. That's freaking awesome.
Tyler, 31. Beautiful wife, three awesome kids, and tell us a little bit about your job. What do you do for work?
Yeah, I work in manufacturing here in Salt Lake City. So I've been doing that for about 7 years in various positions and states, and I love it. Enjoy what I do every day.
Okay,
dude,
nice. Awesome,
so cool.
And tell us, can we move to kind of your experience with porn and masturbation? How did that experience develop in your life?
Yeah, you know, it started at a pretty early age, you know, a lot like a lot of people who've been on the show and started when I was probably 13 or 14 years old. Really just as a curious young guy, you know, just trying to understand what was going on and ended up looking some things up on the computer and fell into the trap. And it started out as something that was just curiosity and quickly turned into a lot more than that. I think for a lot of years it was me really, you know, it started just pornography and then, you know, it masturbation followed, you know, in suit. And then, you know, over time, I fell really big into the trap of the shame and fear of what other people might think. Growing up and all through high school and all that, I know I had friends that were struggling with the same thing I was struggling with.
Just couldn't talk about it though.
I didn't feel good. I didn't feel comfortable doing that. You know.
Well, did any of them talk about it with you?
Oh, no way.
Right?
No, no way. So, no.
You're not. Yeah.
And I think that's fairly normal. I think it happens far too often. And even now, I worry about that. I look at kids in my ward, and I just worry. You know, I worry. Man, if you just knew that you could talk to these guys, how much different your life could be right now. And I pray that they, if anyone's listening, and you're struggling with this and you haven't talked to any of your friends or, you know, have started to work through it. There's so much power in just getting it out there.
Yes. And someone you trust, if it's a, like you said, friend, a family member, a parent, somebody though, right? I mean, it just like to, it's so freeing to tell somebody.
You know, I remember being in young men's and,
was there only one of you in the young men?
Well, no,
young man.
Men itself is a plural word,
dang it.
Right? But somehow,
why
for some
young men's?
I don't know. We possessify it.
That's interesting.
I know. I think it's maybe Utahism. Because, like, you don't shop at Nordstrom, you shop at Nordstrom's, which is incorrect, Utah. But I'm one of us, so whatever.
Right.
Also, you don't go to Zion's National Park.
It's Zion.
It's Zion National Park.
And everyone else outside the state calls it Zion.
Zion.
Which is weird, but.
Zion Williamson. Anyway.
Correct.
If you're listening, please write us an email and we'll have you on the podcast, Zion Williamson. Anyway, I was in... I was a priest in the Aaronic Priesthood, and I think I was part of like some state BYC or something. Anyway, I remember the state president really harping on the issue of pornography with the young men, and a high counselor asked him, have you been meeting with a lot of young men? Is this a prevalent issue? And he said, no, I haven't. That's why I'm concerned.
Whoa.
It's because we're not talking about it. And I know it's a problem. I know it is. If it was a problem when he was growing up with the advent of the internet and technology making it ever so pervasive into where you don't have to find porn, but porn finds you, he knows it's an issue. And so like developing that culture is super important. So back to what you were saying, Tyler, where you and your friends were kind of in a small room with a giant elephant in the room. Everybody's trying to squeeze their way around and nobody's talking of where an open space might live. You know, it's...
So yeah. I'd be curious. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those things that you worry. Like, what's everyone going to think when I can't get up to pass the sacrament or to bless it? And what... And you start to worry too much about what other people think rather than what, you know, God thinks or what I should be doing for myself, you know, many times I let that get in my way growing up and even when I was an adult, you know, I fell into Satan's trap, you know, and he's tricky and he tries to get you to go that way.
Isn't that interesting? I was talking to Ash. Sorry, we are interrupting your story a couple of times already.
Fine.
Doesn't Satan, that's exact, his pitch is, oh, you've messed up, run, hide. That's the first thing he says to Adam and Eve when they hear the voice of the Lord right after they've, you know, they've partaken of the fruit. Quick, run, hide. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it's just like this idea that we're much better off if no one knows about it. It's just a huge, huge lie. But I would be curious, when did it surface? When were you able to address it and say, wow, I need some help with this, or I need to talk to somebody about this? What was that like?
Yeah, you know, it really talking about it and the way to address it the right way, it didn't even come out until after I was married. And, you know, that was a difficult thing. There were times growing up that I brought it up, you know, before I went on my mission, I went a period of time without looking at pornography or masturbation. It wasn't a very long time. It may have been, you know, 6 months, 3 months. It wasn't very long. I shared with my bishop that I had stopped. I hadn't been doing it for, you know, a few months and ended up going on a mission, right? And
where'd you serve?
In Montana.
Oh, sick. Ooh, yeah. Dude.
Big sky country.
That's right. That's awesome, dude.
There we go. We call it Montucky, too.
Montucky
or Montana, you know.
I like it. Nice.
But yeah. That's awesome. Yes, I ended up going on a mission and it came right back. And I didn't last very long. I struggled with, you know, struggled with masturbation a lot and not so much pornography, but
right.
I struggled through most of my mission and I was blessed to have a lot of really awesome experiences despite dealing with that. And I think Heavenly Father knew that I had good intentions and that I was a good person and really blessed me with a lot of opportunities to serve and help people. And so I don't discredit my service in any way because of this thing I was dealing with. I don't, because I know I did good things, but I can only imagine how much more I could have done, right? If I hadn't been in that trap.
Did you seek out, or did you confide in your mission president what you were dealing with, or did you seek his counsel?
No, again, I hit it. And even younger, before I went on my mission, there was one time that my parents saw something on the computer, right, in the history or in a search bar or something, and brought it up to me and asked if I was having issues, and I lied. Mm. I told them, no, that wasn't me, right, and straight up lied. And I was too worried about what they would think, and I was generally a good kid. You know, I did a lot of really good things and was generally thought of as a good one, right?
Yeah, like this whole concept of an image that we have to keep up of,
yeah,
you know, if this part of me is known or disclosed to everybody else, does that change everything? Does that discredit all the good things that I've done?
Which in our minds, it does. Like, and I think Satan presses on that button.
Yeah,
it would discredit all the good that you do.
We're going to, in just a minute, we're going to talk about the chemical scale and how Satan just rolls the snowball through our mind to drive us to act out. But these little things that we've talked about like, oh, I needed to, I had to hide or I had to like lie. These are all just little drips in that chemical scale, right? Of just level one, level two. We'll get into that in a second. But yeah, I mean, you can see it so alive in all of our pasts.
100%.
And unfortunately, you know, those early times at home with my parents sparked a pattern that went on through, you know, through my marriage. And, you know, I'm happy that I am where I am today. And I've had the opportunity to really, you know, go after it. After I go for my mission, I end up, you know, meeting my sweet wife and got married, moved on and, you know, started jobs. I tried so many times on my own to try to kick the addiction. And I was constantly feeding myself lies that, no, this is an addiction. You can just stop. But it's been going on for so long. It is. And, you know, eventually was caught by my wife I wish I could be the guy that says, yeah, I told her. And looking back now, I would have told her in a heartbeat, because the first time, and the thing is it didn't just happen once. You know, it's happened three times. And I'm telling all the listeners out there this, because I know there's others out there that are doing the same thing. And if you get anything out of this, it's that don't wait. You're carrying too big of a burden. And I didn't recognize how big of a burden I was carrying, because those little rocks kept all those pebbles kept adding up and adding up over years. And, you know, 15, 16, 17 years down the road of adding pebbles every day to your load is a big weight to carry. Wow. And when it finally came out, as hard of a situation as that was, you know, with my wife, the load that was released from my back was unlike anything I'd ever felt in my life. And
wow.
And it's worth every bit of sharing it, no matter how scary it may feel like, or you may be fearful that you'll lose everything, and you might, but in the end, it's the right thing to do. And I know that now. It's something that I didn't know for all those years, recognize, but after being involved in the program and knowing what I'm, you know, what I can really do and what I can feel like, yeah, there's no going back now.
Wow. What stood out to me from your experience there is I don't think I'd ever thought about it as that. It's not a lot of the time, it's not a discernible weight that you carry, right? It is. It's a little bit of it at a time. It's one lie here. It's one lie there. It's and then you have these rock bottom moments where you're like, holy smokes, what's wrong with me? But then you kind of like put it to the side. You're just like, you know, no, I'm good. Like you said. Tyler, dude, like, thank you for sharing that, because I don't think we do on the podcast talk about it, but just you being vulnerable enough to say that you lied through your experience, everyone has, because there is that, there's the real fear of, what does this mean for my family? Will I lose everything? Like you said, maybe. And I actually like the way you said, yeah, I might lose everything. Maybe everyone will disown me and never talk to me ever again, but it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, if you think of the addiction being like a real wound, like a gash in your leg or something, if it goes unaddressed and unattended, it'll fester, right? Bacteria will get in there and our body will decay and start to die. And in many cases, what has to happen in order to save your life is amputation. And we lose a part of ourselves. And we've talked to many warriors that have experienced the tragedies of lost custody of their children. they've broken vows they've made in the temple and have suffered the consequences of divorce. And there's just real risk that we run when we don't seek help, when we don't seek attention that we need. In Lane's office on the back wall here, right behind Tyler, is a poem that we've referred to several times on the podcast by William Ernest Henley called Invictus. And there's a couplet that says, "Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade." And I love that line because Satan will plant in our mind that coming out of the shade and out of the shadows is the scariest thing that we can do, to be in the spotlight, to be completely vulnerable. But all of a sudden, there's nothing there. It's just a shadow, right? Mm-hmm. There's no big scary monster. It's what you were saying, Tyler. All of a sudden, you're so liberated by the weight that's been lifted from you. It's an incredible reversal of, it couldn't be farther from the truth.
Right.
The freedom we experience.
Dude, 100%. I'd be curious then, what was your process like getting to the point where you could tell your wife?
Well, the thing is, I didn't, right? Unfortunately, to this point, it's been me getting caught.
Mm.
I'll be totally honest with you. I haven't to this point had that courage, and that's why I encourage those out there so much to do it, because as hard as it is, to tell someone, if they find out when you get caught, it's that much harder. And I know that from experience, how hard that is to not only have the challenges that come from, from lying and the deceit, lying, deceit, but then also pornography and right. everything else that comes along with it. It's a lot. It's a lot for your loved ones to bear. I'm grateful my wife has stood by me through all of this and has been as patient as she has been, because, frankly, there's been times where if she had left, honestly, I couldn't have blamed her, right? But I'm grateful I have her now, and I'm going to do everything I can to keep her. I fight for her all the time. There's a lot of reasons I fight, and for myself, but she's given me enough chances. It's time, right?
No, oh, dude.
Yeah. So can I ask you then? You said it's happened three times. Could you, if you want, you don't have to answer this question, but could you tell us what was the difference between being caught the first time and being caught the third time, and how that felt for you?
I think a lot of the same feelings come back each time, but I think the reactions have been different in each experience. So the first reaction is, was very much a still denying the problem, or denying that it's a serious deal. I didn't take it as seriously as I should have. I let myself go back into old habits too early. I didn't necessarily know the right programs to reach out to. I was not open to talking about it with anybody, really. I mean, even I talked to the bishop and all those things afterwards, but I was still too ashamed. And I think that shame is really a real thing. I call, there's a lot of shame in the shadows, right? And when you're back in those shadows, it's easy to stay there and not come out and really talk to people. And then it just holds in, and it ends up coming back out, and you don't get over it. And then the second time was better. I went quite a while longer. But eventually I got into some stressful situations with work, and I can make up all kinds of excuses as to why I stopped doing the right things every day, and ended up feeling prideful. Like I don't need to read my scriptures every day, or I don't need to pray every day. I'm good. It's been, it's been quite a while since I've fallen into the trap. But also I think there's a lot of learning that's come from this time. And a lot of that's had to do with the book, like Dragons Do They Fight. When I went to talk to my bishop this time, and this time was a little different. My wife asked me if I was, if I was into pornography again. And I at first started to lie. And then after being pressed somewhere, I told her I was. And but this time I went to the bishop, alone. And I told him what was going on. And he said, you need to go read this book, you know, and you need to join the Meta Moroni program and all that. And I'm, for that reason, I'm eternally grateful because I've learned so much. But the mindset of that Satan is attacking us and that he's putting those thoughts into our brains and that it is a real war has made a big difference in how I look at all of it. Because up until this point, I just thought, is there something wrong with me? And now I know there's not, and I know that I've got a fighting chance at it.
Oh, man. What was that realization like when you're like, wait a sec.
It's not me.
It's not me.
Yeah.
This is my brain, and then Satan manipulating the heck out of it, right? Like, I don't know. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it clicked. It just clicked because I know I'm a good person.
Yes.
I know I'm a good person. I know I do good things. And I try to serve others and I try to do good things for my family and for my wife and my kids. I try to be the right kind of dad. And to hear that that is what was going on is just, it spoke to me. I knew that it was true. And I immediately started exercising, you know, the warrior chemistry utilizing that in battles, because before it was just, you know, white knuckled and very, very difficult.
And hope for the best kind of thing.
Yeah.
Versus tactical, strategical, like, this is how we can actually defeat this.
See how different that is when we can place. It's just giving the devil his due, man.
Seriously.
Like, all of a sudden that shame turns to guilt, right? Which is a positive thing. It helps us understand, man, dang it. Satan manipulated me, what Spence was saying. Mm-hmm. I know better, and I can do better next time. And then we do a lost battle analysis, everything, yep. Right? But beforehand, it's like, man, I suck. I'm absolute trash. Maybe I really do like this. Maybe this is actually what I want.
Maybe this is who I am.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a creeper, porn addict, like, scary. And my mom saw that happen, like, over time, switch in my brain of, like, I think that he actually, he believes it's him. Like, that was, and she didn't. She knew, because she's friggin' amazing.
She's perfect.
Love her. Yeah. But does that make sense? Like, that realization was game-changing for me as well.
The thing about keeping it in is you start to lose hope. You lose hope that you can't overcome this. And when you keep it in, it just keeps going on and on and on. It'll drag out forever.
Well, it's because it's a trust thing. I don't trust myself. Like, you don't trust yourself. Like, oh, I've tried this before. It obviously hasn't worked because it's still a problem. Yeah. So obviously it's something I'm it's me.
And you change your like your orientation from where you need validation. I think we all share the story of, man, growing up in my Mormon community, having to be the perfect Boy Scout kid, and I can't have this problem. Because as soon as I have this problem, it wipes away everything that I've ever done. Reminds me of a story that Elder Uchtdorf shared in General Conference. He shared I don't think I've shared this on here. Maybe I have. Sorry if I have.
I don't know.
But shares the concept of what's known as a Potemkin village. Okay? In Tsarist Russia times, let's see, under Empress Catherine the Great, she had a vizier named Grigory Potemkin. And
Grigory
Potemkin. Okay. And while Catherine was like exploring or visiting the feudal villages in southern Russia, from St. Petersburg down the Dnieper River, Potemkin had commissioned soldiers and people along the riverbanks to build these villages, to build these facade fake villages. Imagine someone like going out and building a town out of plywood to make it look like things are going well and that
the community's thriving.
Yeah, it's completely cosmetic, right? It's a total fake deal. In fact, military strategists use this same idea all the time to make a base look more populous than it actually is. My grandpa would tell me this when he was in the war. He was a bomber, and so he'd look at everything from the sky, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, they'd sometimes like they would erect these, you know, like styrofoam bomber-sized planes. to make it look like this is actually the target from the... Anyway, whoa, so the whole idea comes back to putting on quite a show for people to think things are different than they actually are. If you strip away the Potemkin village, then you found people who were starving and hungry and naked and needed help. And the Empress would, you know, if she doesn't see those problems, she doesn't have to address them. And so it's almost the same thing, the same lie that we tell to ourselves of, as long as everybody thinks that things are okay,
then they are. Must be.
But what they don't know is that the people that are starving behind the plywood don't get fed. The people that are sick don't get attended to. The people that are naked don't get clothed. And so we're just putting off an inevitable problem.
So then I'd be curious on that note. Sure. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. On that note then, Tyler, how would you compare the experience of living a Potemkin village to what it feels like now? Like, I would be curious to hear the contrast.
Yeah, I think, you know, before it was, this feeling of being afraid constantly, nervous that someone was going to pick up your phone and see something, right? Or that you're going to get caught in your, you know, in your lie and your fear of what's, you know, what could happen. And
someone comes behind the plywood and sees that the village is actually suffering. And you're like, no.
Oh yeah.
Don't come back here. Right. Oh my God.
What's down that street? Oh, we don't need to go there. No.
Could you imagine being the leader of that village and then having to
keep, you know, make sure that no one actually came behind,
yeah, or no one leaves and tells anybody,
oh man,
right? You can imagine that feeling. It's the same thing I felt, you know, before. Is what I'm always worried about: how am I ever going to be, you know, how am I going to be good enough for my family? How am I going to be good enough to? Because you got to imagine that leader, that village is still thinking all along, you know, if it's a good leader, you'd hope they'd be wanting the best for everyone, right?
Right.
But not knowing how to do it and how to really go about making it right. And
whoa.
I think now is the difference, is that the tools that I've learned through these programs and through, you know, the book, like Dragons Do They Fight, and by going to the Men of Moroni, the group that I go to out in Tula Valley, it's really given me the tools, and it's a liberating feeling knowing that now I have the tools to do the real thing. I don't have to hide anything anymore. And now it doesn't matter to me if people know. I mean, clearly I'm on the podcast, right? Sharing about my story.
Yeah.
I don't care. And I'm at the point where I know that for me to get the strength, I got to try to help others. And if that means I share it, I'm not going to go shouting from the rooftops and all that. And I'm going to share it with people who need it. But I just want to help, right? And it's a difference.
And here's the thing, as good of a man as you are, just from the brief moments we've had, there's got to be hundreds, thousands of Tylers out there that are good. I mean, there's tons of good people out there, right, that feel this way about themselves, and they have to keep that Potemkin village. They've got to keep people out of their back area. They're fearful for what's going to happen. If you can be a facilitator, if me and Wes can be a facilitator of helping break down those villages, saying, hey, this is real, this is the real me, and I'm fighting it, I'm doing all I can. Like, it's a different, it's a completely different feeling in my life, in your life, right? It's the coolest.
Yeah, I mean, Doctrine and Covenant says they're kept from the truth because they don't know where to find it.
Wow.
You know, and that's... When we as a community, for all of you eternal warriors out there in listener land, when you are bold enough to be the first one to speak, to disclose to your friend, to your brother, to your wife, to your sister, hey, you know what, this is a challenge. I've struggled with pornography and masturbation, but I'm doing something about it. All of a sudden, we give permission for everybody to share their scars, whatever they are,
yeah,
and facilitate a climate of care
and trust.
And trust. Yeah. It's awesome.
What's that been like from your side, talking to your wife? I mean, it sounds like she's just been a friggin' rock star.
Yeah, she absolutely has. I mean, there's a lot of trust that's broken, right? And my story's not any different in that way, that there's a lot of trusts that were broken, and it takes a lot to try to rebuild it. And I'm still rebuilding. I'm not going to say that it's perfect.
It's a process, man. It's a journey, right? It is, right?
You know, and so I think really it's about showing and doing everything you can to show her that you're living it and sharing what you're learning and trying to really do it and not just do it for show, but show that it's real, right? And I can't say how to do that exactly, but but when you're doing it for real, I think I have to believe and have a lot of hope that your spouse will know.
Oh, that trust is rebuilt one day at a time, one battle at a time. One time she sees you writing in your manpower journal or whatever, you know, it builds itself.
You know what? She doesn't need to see it though.
That's true.
She can feel it.
That's true.
She absolutely can feel it.
Wow. That's a good point.
And as soon as we start to do things to be seen of men,
that's true.
You know, that's an avenue for pride for sure. But absolutely, your wife will notice the change in you. You talked about learning some skills and developing a tool set through Men of Moroni. Let's talk about that. One of the things that you mentioned in your email to us that was so captivating that we wanted to chat with you about is the whole concept of the chemical scale. And if you guys remember from our episode, I believe it was with Holden in season one.
Mm-hmm. Episode like
he talked
four?
A lot about, yeah, it was pretty soon or pretty early. He gives a good walkthrough of the chemical scale, but we want to do a review with Tyler on that. Tyler, what are like your key things that you like about the chemical scale that you've learned so far?
You know, for me, I'm a pretty analytical person. You know, I typically can look back at myself and understand what I'm doing wrong, right, and be able to try to correct it. And understanding the chemical scale helped me realize what I was doing and how I was being affected by the lies that, you know, were thrown at me or the thoughts or the images or whatever was coming my direction. I really started to understand how it was happening and then gave me a way to recognize it and then do something before it got out of control. Oh. And that's really been the biggest thing. And I think what I've learned is you go through the chemical scale, zero is where you want to be, right? It's mm-hmm. you feel the spirit, you're happy, you're, you know,
living by values. Yeah.
You're doing the right things. And then one, you feel off. Two, you're feeling one of those feelings of you're sad, you're tired, angry, frustrated, those types of things.
Stressed, yeah.
Three is the dude moment, like, hey, I could go do this right now. Four is, you know, your four is really that internal struggle. Yeah, you know,
mm-hmm. conversation. And forth,
that conversation.
Irrational conversation. Yep.
Yep. Saying yeah. And then five is it's over pretty much. You're
made the choice.
You're committed, and unless someone interrupts you, it's over. And I think a lot of times that can happen a lot faster than what we all really think. And I think there's so many times there's distractions in our lives that just hide it. They can hide levels one through, you know, even one through three or one through four. And you could be at a five before you're even there. And I'll share a quick story. And this is one of the biggest reasons why I reached out to Wes and Spenny and just thanked them for their podcast, because back when I first, you know, talked to the bishop and all that this time, I started thinking about what I was doing on a day-to-day basis. And I listened to music in my truck on my way to work, and it was just country music on the radio. And, I've always loved listening to country music, and I always thought it was fine to listen to. And then I realized what was happening and after I learned about the chemical scale, I realized I was at a level five before I even got to work. It was already a choice made and done and over, and I didn't even realize how I got there. And I recognized that the music that I was listening to in the car was really what was driving that and hiding all of those chemical scales and everything that was going on wow. on the way there. Mm-hmm. I was tired because it was early. You know, I was, you know, frustrated because I may have gotten phone calls all night from work, you know, the previous night. And
you're stressed about all everything else, family and duties, and yeah.
And I didn't recognize it. I couldn't even hear myself think or understand what my own feelings were or what I was going through because of my distractions. And then before you know it, boom, I was
the tail is wagging the dog, right?
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
That's fascinating to bring up. There's a certain level of numbness to your own self. It's like there's zero self-awareness of what's actually happening in your brain. And that was the same experience for me. Is it was eye-opening to read about the chemical scale and be like, oh, there's something actually happening in my brain that I'm not even aware of. And once I was aware of it, now we can do something about it.
That's what I loved about learning about the chemical scale myself is as soon as you start to look for it, you see it. And it does start to slow down. I think I have gone stretches at a time where, like, I've lived at a level one or a level two.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. You're just in an... You're in such an emotional, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. such an emotional state that you're making knee-jerk, reactive choices and decisions. Mm-hmm. You get really defensive. You're irritable.
With people, yeah. Oh, man. Oh, dude.
And you just are... I think everybody has like a friend or two or an associate or two that you're like, man, they're just a genuinely unpleasant person or something. They just live at a level two or three.
It's true.
They really do.
They allow themselves.
Yeah. And like, I know a lot of our listeners have anxiety issues, and I myself do. And sometimes it, you know, our genetic predispositions make it difficult for us to live at a plane that we want to. Luckily, we live in the age of psychiatric drugs and things like that. But that I guess, outlier aside, there's people that allow, and to what Tyler said, they just don't know. They don't know it's Satan that's pushing them around, that is festering into their wound.
Just listen to country music, right? Just listen to country music.
But man, enough dogs die and enough trucks break. You're at a level four before you get to work, man.
It's ugly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I changed my habits after I recognized that it was, I couldn't even tell where I was at in the chemical scale. Mm-hmm. And so I changed my habits, turned off the music, you know, and eventually ended up turning on the podcast every morning, going into work.
That's what
we wanted. Let's go. And you know what? It has made such a big difference, because every morning now I show up at work and it's, I've been thinking about what I'm going to do different. I'm feeding off of other people's experiences and how they're, you know, how they're battling against Satan. And I'm trying to adopt the theories that people are sharing, what they've done and
what's working for them, dude.
Yeah. And no more am I already planning to fail. I'm planning to win now every day when I'm going to work, and I could recognize when something was happening.
So can we walk it back a little bit and walk through back in the Alan Jackson, Blake Shelton listening days, how you feel like you would progress through the chemical scale on your way to work?
Yeah, I mean,
bless you. Excuse me. Bless you.
Sorry, multiple sneezer.
Okay. You know, I think the progression happened really quick. I couldn't even tell. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even tell when I was moving through the scale. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I was already, I'm sure as I was going to work, I was listening to things that were being said, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes there's inappropriate stuff that's said in that song. I mean, there are a lot of times there are in those songs. And I think that they were getting in, and maybe you started to think about something that was being said.
Right. So let's start triggering some dude moments, right?
So, boom.
I recall something, right?
I think we can probably pinpoint it pretty well. You said earlier that you wake up. What time do you get up usually? Are you getting into work?
About 5 a.m. I get up.
Man,
okay. Mornings.
That's early.
Tired.
Okay, you're tired. We're already at level one.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. We're feeling off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is normal, right? Which is, we're going to be tired in our
super
lives.
Normal. Yep. I think few people. Maybe Hayden pops out of bed at like a -3, hops in a cold shower, and absolutely loves it. But
you know, and then sometimes I'm already level two because I if I got called all night because mm-hmm. of work or. You know, something happened at home, the kids kept you awake or
frustrated.
You know, no matter what may happen, you may already be frustrated and you may be a level two before you even leave
when
the door.
When we start feelings.
Man, I mean, I've had dreams too that have been a level three, right? I wake up and I'm all of a sudden like, ooh, right?
Yeah,
right. Level three, level four. So you're right, it can happen pretty quick. But let's walk through this.
So how many times, like, I know for me, all of a sudden the alarm goes off and I just go, oh, that's level two.
Yep.
Right. Level one, I think, sounds more like,
dang it.
Level two is,
it's got a sound.
Yeah,
to
it's
it.
Like it's like I've already like,
I'm throwing in the towel.
This is a snooze
like
moment.
This
you
sucks.
Know.
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's. So then you're kind of like, oh, man, I've got to go deal with those punks that have been calling me all night because they don't know how to run the plant or whatever. And you're.
Sure.
Or whatever. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. And then you know it's you're thinking about that and you get in the car mm-hmm. and then. All of a sudden, something pops up on the radio, mm-hmm. and it sparks a thought.
I think that's what I was going to say, is I think it's probably that's an additional flash
That's right.
And then satanic spin happens again. And you dunk back, another chemical is dropped, and you're like, ooh, dude.
And your path of least resistance, what we talked about last week, is how did I satisfy this last unpleasant time. Feeling last time?
Oh, well, I looked at porn and I masturbated. Okay, well, how would I actually do that at work? Would I be able to pull that off? Bathroom? Then you start having a conversation.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. And then before you know it, you're committed, right? And it's over.
And there you go. And so I love walking through that. Yeah. So thank you, Wes. And thank you, Tyler, for talking about that. Because I think for all of you listening, identify where those happen naturally. Because to Wes's point earlier, we're going to be tired. We're going to be frustrated. We're going to be stressed. We're not going to eliminate. We're not going to live at a level zero all the time. Ideally, I mean, that'd be great. But life is going to happen. Right. Like, it's real. Like, this is raw. Like, it sucks a lot of the time. Sometimes things are just going to happen. Something at work, something your wife says that you're caught off guard, and that may spill something, you know? It's going to happen. So as you're listening to this episode and as you're thinking about your own experience, think about what those triggers might be, where those chemical spills happen, and then start making a plan around it.
As long as you're dealing with mortals in your life, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And mortals as in dealing with myself, because it's going, I'm going to be frustrated with myself.
For true.
Why didn't I do this? And then I start feeling that, how did I satisfy this last time?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so things that we can do to get back to a level zero. So we know we've had Lane on, and he's talked about when we're in a level two, level three, whatever level we're at, battle, the limbic system, your kind of lizard brain, has the reaction of fight, flight, freeze, feed, or breed. And unfortunately for us who are listening to this podcast, we've chosen that last friend right there, breed. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's kind of been our path of least resistance.
Or flight away from life, right? It's like, I don't want to deal with this. I'm going to numb it with something.
But there's some things that we can do to help us. When we wake up, maybe like have like a little favorite breakfast that makes things a little bit easier to get out of bed or something, right?
You talk about habits, right? Your habits had to change.
That's right.
Right? So the podcast was one of them. Mm-hmm. But you're exactly right.
Maybe like,
change something.
Maybe some granola. I don't know. Maybe a little nanner. Something that gets you going in the morning.
Could you speak to those habits if you have any in mind that come top of mind of what started changing in your routine? We talked about them a little bit before, so I'm kind of alluding to what you got to eventually, but I think it'd be cool to hear what did manpower look like? What did drills look like? What did routine look like?
Yeah, I think manpower has played a huge, huge role in this experience for me. And even in one of the time before this that I, you know, that it came out, I started on some good routines and did some things that were part of manpower that weren't there. And I eventually fell away from it. And then quickly after fell back into the struggle. Right.
Right.
But this time's been different, especially when it comes to manpower and some of the goals I do at night. You know, I wake up and say my prayers in the morning and those types of things. But when it comes to like writing in my journal and my nightly prayers, I found to be the most effective part of my daily habits. And I didn't really recognize this at first of what it was until I was at group a couple weekends ago. And our group leader was talking about the difference between the aggressive warrior chemistry where you're out to fight and win. And then there's the love warrior chemistry that's more gentle and just comes and is more of a, you know, on a more natural basis if you recognize it. And I didn't realize it as much as what I was doing, but now I do. And it's I've been able to enhance it even more after we've talked about it. So early on, right, some of the things with that warrior chemistry was just fighting to win. And I was going to win, and I had to get angry, and I had to, you know, command Satan to leave me alone, those types of things. And it worked, and it helped me get through. But now it's more on the trickle of a love type of a
basis.
And so I'll kind of give you an example of one of the things that I do is every night the first thing I do is as I say my prayers. And at first it was difficult to have all that long conversation with Heavenly Father. And like, what do you say? And it felt a little awkward because I hadn't really done that before very much in my life. But then I recognized that, you know, if I started just telling Heavenly Father about my day, then I would start to identify things that maybe I needed to repent of, and then identify things that were really positive that I could even just tell Heavenly Father about. And I know He's already seen it, but for me, sharing that with Him has helped build my relationship with Heavenly Father, but also helped me to have more appreciation for those things that have happened, right? You know, I try to pick out and pinpoint one thing that's really positive that happened that day that just really makes me feel good inside. And I think the example I shared, you know, with you guys a little bit before we started was...
Please, dude. This is so cool.
Is yeah, I've got this sweet little daughter, and she's 20 months old now, and she just loves her dad. And it's a cool thing when I get home and the garage door opens and she hears it, or my wife yells to my daughter that, you know, hey, dad's home. She comes running as fast as she can through the house, and she's yelling, dad, 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 and she comes and gives me this big hug, right? And just lights up. And the feelings that I feel inside when I have that happen are like nothing that I can really describe, especially when I think back on it. And it even chokes me up a little bit to think, you know, how much love I have with my kids, you know, they have for me and that I have back for them. And then I start to think about, now what if I lost that? And immediately there's just this huge flood of warrior chemistry that floods in. And so that's one example, but I try to find a different thing every night as to why I'm so grateful that I get to have them in my life. And I don't even think about, you know, I may not even be thinking about the addiction at the time. I'm just thinking about why I'm grateful to have them. And it makes me feel good inside. And I feel that warrior chemistry, and the spill happens. And then I write about it in my journal, and it just cements it in my mind. And I feel like every time I've done that, that I have a different kind of night. My next morning is just that much easier. I started off right. I have the prayer the next morning, and I just go on throughout the day, and it becomes this nice cycle that's really helped to keep me at a zero more times than I've ever been before.
And that's what I was going to say, is coming back to the chemical scale, it brings you back. I think that's what stood out in the beginning of, before we even started recording, is how it would bring you back to level zero.
Oh yeah, every time. Even if I'm at a one or a two, or I'm frustrated about something, if I follow that routine every night and I find that one thing, no matter what it is, you know, if it's something positive that happened at work or something that happened with, I usually try to find something with my family, but it always drops me back to zero. And dude, it's a big deal.
So then we'd have to have Cody or Lane or Maurice here to explain why that works so well. I can make my own hypotheses.
Go right ahead.
Can I?
Permission granted.
Because I genuinely believe that the way you talked about it, praying to God and writing, that's a way to, you're intentionally putting thought into what happens. How many times have I had something great happened in the day, but I haven't even reflected on it because we just keep moving. You're putting intentional thought into the prayer. You put intentional thought into writing, and that forces us to come to a different part of our brain. And we talked about this briefly before, and I'd have to confirm with the therapists on this, but we can't, I don't feel like I've been able to feel that, how did I say that before? I felt like it was pretty rich before we started, but I can't, like, when I externalize something and I get it down on paper, I can't also feel the same, like it forces me. I don't know. What was I? I don't know.
I don't remember.
For me, it forces me to feel that emotion so much stronger.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, that's for me how it works.
And it's that externalization.
It like distills it, right? You can't avoid it.
Yeah, and you can't still feel simultaneously this immense feeling of love and passion and warrior chemistry at the same time that you're feeling anxiety and stress and, you know, you're replacing it. You're putting something else there. You're putting positive emotion. You're putting positive experience. You're forcing yourself to think about it. It's a choice. You are now a proactive captain. You're a master of your fate. You're a captain of your soul. You're no longer just letting the day happen to you. Isn't that the coolest? I just love
that
tool. Yeah, your intention and the way you do that.
And even if you're at a level zero, still do it. do it, because you'll feel it even stronger and you'll be that more prepared for when he attacks.
It's
next.
A drill.
It's a drill.
We habit. Have to be doing these things. It's, I mean, we've talked a lot about how preparation is essential for success. I think we talked about this.
Yeah.
We talked about, like, the dynasty of Alabama football. Didn't we talk about that last year?
Oh.
Do you remember this? And somebody...
Did we?
I think we did.
Yeah, you did.
Dang it! I think an SEC coach, I think it was Arkansas coach or someone, was interviewed. And they're like, why is Alabama so dominant? And they said, because 99% of the games that Alabama wins, they have won before the kickoff of the game. They have practiced and prepared at a level that nobody else is willing to.
And their
to.
Mentality.
Yeah.
Their mentality going into it. And so you've changed your mentality. I'm going to go win. I'm not going to hope I win. I'm not going to hope not to lose. But I'm going to make an intentional choice to go win.
That's right.
And that's something you can do. And so that's why tools. Oh, dude.
What's cool about after we win, we review the game film, not just when we lose, but also when we win. What worked well? Where can I, even be better next time? Because, like, Satan's reviewing the game film as well. And he's going to make his changes. And you, before we started recording, Tyler, you said as well that you change your reasons for fighting pretty often, too. Tell us why you that.
Well, it keeps it fresh. I found if I keep saying the same reason for fighting, I don't always feel the same warrior chemistry over and over and over again. You know, holding on to that one reason why isn't enough. You know, I have the deep down reasons for fighting, which is for me, right? I'm going to be happy in this life. I'm not going to be held down by Satan anymore. And those reasons for fighting are always going to be there. But I think for me to help keep it fresh every day is I got to find something new. I got to keep thinking about why else am I fighting? And as I build my life, as I work forward, work and make progress forward, I want to keep finding more and more reasons. Dude. So that every day it's something new and something else that I just appreciate about life.
And is that what you write? Is that your writing? Do you write while you fight, or what are you writing? I'd be curious to hear, like, what is the writing like?
Yeah, so I end up writing, I'll tell a little bit about my day. I do. I do a little bit of that first. But then it usually goes into, I tell about an experience that I had, something really positive that occurred, and I share how I felt. And then at the end, I always add into something like, and this is why I fight every day. I'm not going to lose this, or, I try to make it a point to say that, like, almost one of those, it's a personal validation that, yeah, I'm gonna move forward, so I can have this experience over and over and over again, and that's why I fight.
That's what makes it so fresh, right? It's something that happened today that was positive. I want that to happen again. Let's keep doing this, right? Like, it's such a positive reinforcement habit that you're doing. It's so cool.
And sometimes it's just me being proud of my kids. It's like, we go to a basketball game on Saturday and my boy makes a basket, we all cheer and are happy. And I record about that moment in my journal and how proud I was of my son at that time, and try to make it an emotional memory that I'll have forever. Right. And not only that, but then it just, that emotion about something really cool that's happening that you're proud of, for me, just does the trick and drops me back to zero.
I think the Lord is very merciful to us in our memories, that we sometimes remember things even better than how they actually occurred.
That's true.
Isn't that so true that we...
Oh, dude, that trip was so great.
Right? Yeah, and it's, you don't, like, remember
really anything
all the
about
crappy
it,
things. Like, think about your mission.
Oh, man. It was so hard.
It was the worst, but also the best, right?
But all we think about, all we think remember about, is the
positive. Lord is very merciful to us in our memory. We do not have good long-term, terrible memory. That, and, like, I think, again, me putting on my psychologist hat here, that's, I think, a reason why maybe some really terrible memories are suppressed and even, like, deleted from memory, and people have to work through therapy in depth to, like, bring those things out and talk about them. It's because, like, there's, like, some type of biological, merciful defense mechanism in place to help us remember things well.
Oh, dude. Mm-hmm. Something you said, and then I think we better hear this man's reasons for fighting.
Yeah, the current reasons.
The current reasons of today.
Yes.
Probably for the podcast. I don't know. I'm not going to put any words in his mouth. Just kidding. No, but the visualization, I just couldn't help but think of that visualization of you cheering for your boy. Playing basketball. How old is he?
Oh, he's six.
6 years old. So cool. He's throwing up hoops to a, is it a 10-foot hoop?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Probably seven and a half footer.
Right, because I can barely even loft it up.
That's what high. I play on.
Still?
Yeah. Dunk oh, I just graduated to that.
Oh.
Yeah. Little tights.
Yeah.
Yeah, little tights.
Little tights.
Dude, I love those things.
Yep, that's my brand.
But I love the fact that he's 6 years old. I love the fact that he's young, he's innocent, he's beautiful, wonderful little boy, and he shoots a basket and it goes in and we cheer. And I can't help but think that's exactly how Heavenly Father feels about us. I can't help but think that here we are, these little 6 year old boys, literally in our spiritual experience on this earth, and there he is.
Traveling all over the place.
Traveling
double
all over
dribbling
the,
yep, like
double
we can't.
Dribbling. Oh man, I don't even know the rules of the game, and I'm just like trying to, you know what I mean? And I loft up one shot with all of my might, and he just cheers his heart out.
Yeah.
Says, "That's my boy. Go get, like, and now, like, let's practice. Let's do this, and you can do it again." And you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I just know that out there listening, you may feel like you are constantly just traveling, double dribbling. You're a 6 year old. Basketball player that can't figure it out. And I just will say that just like Tyler loves his boy, regardless, right? It doesn't matter if he travels. It doesn't matter if he double dribbles. That's part of the learning experience.
And also that's like part of what endears us to them, right?
Right.
That's what makes it so
like
beautiful
that,
and cute.
Isn't know? That amazing? And yeah. I know that's how our Heavenly Father sees us. Oh, you double dribbled. It's all right, buddy. Let's go at it again. Let's cheer for the wins.
Do you say, "Well, son, probably don't double dribble next time"? No, you say, "Man, heck of a shot."
Yeah.
Heck of a shot,
awesome, right?
Dude,
that's
great
what we're
that was so yeah. cool.
Oh,
right?
You give him a pat on the back, you lift him up after the game, yeah. I don't that visualization was beautiful. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
So, Tyler, the time has come for us to ask a question that we have asked many a time. We want to know why you fight, why you won't give up.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I fight for myself. That realization's come in the last 90 days, is that I fight for me, number one, and that has to be me first. And so I do. I fight for me. I fight for, you know, I've had this burden on my back for so many years. 17, 18 years where I've carried a burden on my back, and I fight to keep it off. You know, and I fight for the happiness that comes when you can live without the guilt that comes around the choices that we make. I fight so that I can be a worthy husband and father for my kids. I fight so that I'm ready to offer them worthy priesthood blessings.
Yeah.
I fight so that I can go to the temple and I can interview with my bishop and with the state president, and I can feel good about the answers that I'm giving. Okay. I fight for those experiences I talked about. I fight for them every day, right? I fight so that I can be with them, right? I fight so I can keep them. And I want to have those experiences and those relationships with my children and my wife for forever. I fight for the way that my wife looks me in the eyes when she's, when you know she loves you, right? And I fight so that I can be worthy of all the blessings that my Heavenly Father has ready to bless me with. And that's why I fight.
I gave another gasp. I'm sorry.
You gasp it up, brother.
Dude, Tyler, you are amazing.
It is clear as day that you have made your choice today. And thanks for sharing your story with us and with our community.
Oh.
So many people will draw from your incredible strength,
from your immense amount of strength.
I thank you guys, and I want everybody out there to know that you can do this, right? You can do it. I mean, if somebody's gone through this addiction like me for 18 years, and I can feel this way right now. I'm not perfect, but if I can do it, you can. And I think that's what I want you to know, is that you can do it. And so do it.
And it took you doing something that you'd never done before, right? If we do something we've never done before, we can't help but get a different result. Change isn't possible. It's inevitable when we do what we have to.
It's going to happen. So make the choice. Put the foot in the ground. Pick up the book. Read it, right? Like Dragons Did They Fight?
Make the call.
Make the call. Write the email.
Talk to your wife. Talk to your mom. Talk to whoever it is that you need to. Talk to us.
Yes.
Heck, we got nothing else to do. We'll talk to you.
Yes. If I can... Oh, and Tyler, thank you for saying that, because if there is any other message, if there's no other message than this one on this podcast, it is that is important. It is, you can do it. And I feel the exact same way. If I can do it, I know that anyone can, because it has been hell. It has been hell. It has been, I can't even describe what that, you know. And so you can do it. Don't lose hope. Don't give up, and just make that one hard choice.
We love you guys. We'll catch you next week.